Welcome to today's edition of the Rush 24/7 podcast.
Folks, it is panic time in the Democrat Party and with the drive-by media. They are in full-fledged panic mode. McCain is up by 6 points in one poll. The Messiah and McCain are tied in every other poll. The LA Times Bloomberg poll that I previewed yesterday indicates that the Messiah is not attracting new voters. And by the way, Obama's long-lost brother has been found living in a hut in Kenya, in a shantytown hut in Kenya, proud to say he's living on less than a dollar a day over there. I guess Vanity Fair tracked him down. Greetings, my friends. Welcome, Rush Limbaugh, the EIB Network, and the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies. Great to have you with us today. Telephone number is 800-282-2882 and the email address lrushbo@eibnet.com. Just off the wires from lifenews.com, John McCain has reportedly confirmed that he will not be picking a running mate who takes a pro-abortion position. And he has ruled out former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge, whom media outlets promoted as a possibility. McCain aides told Republican Party officials of the decision, and they confirmed that to Fox News. So apparently the McCain camp is putting it out there that they're not going to pick a pro-choice guy to be on the ticket. Now, a lot of people think that this is, some people, I think, who is it, Mark Halperin of Time, thinks that all of this has been a smokescreen to set up the eventual choice of Mitt Romney. Now, from what I've been told, Mitt Romney is the number one choice of McCain aides, but the rhinos that are also part of McCain's team, Lindsey Graham leading the bunch, they're the ones who have been pushing Lieberman in the news. But they are, from what I'm told, they're not the ones empowered to help McCain make this choice. Tim Pawlenty remains high on the list as well. And as far as what Obama's doing, it looks like Biden. Evan Bayh of Indiana. It turns out Evan Bayh and Tim Kaine flew out to Hawaii to visit their last interviews with the Messiah when he was on vacation. And I don't think it'd be Tim Kaine, because there's a lieutenant governor in Virginia who's Republican, who would then launch himself to the governorship in that state. As for, I hope it's Biden. I really hope it's Biden. We don't want to say that too loud, but I really do hope that it's Joe Biden, because we've got a mountain of archival audio on Joe Biden, plus the arrogance factor times two with Biden and the Messiah would just be delicious. But I also have a little bit of a desire that he choose Evan Bayh. Can you imagine the name of that ticket? Obama Bayh. Obama Bayh. Bye-bye, Obama Bayh. So, we've got so much stuff to do today. It's just an incredible morning of show prep here. I've enjoyed it immensely. Let's go to the audio sound bites first. The story that just won't go away. Last night on ABC's Wordle News Tonight, reporter Neil Karlinski reporting on the troubles of children going back to school.
Along historic Route 66 in Kingman, Arizona, we found a close-knit community strapped by high food and gas prices and struggling to get their kids ready to go back to school.
We're definitely having to just buy the bare minimum this year.
Really, the bare minimum?
Yeah.
Tanya Baca's back-to-school budget has dropped this year from $250 per child to just $100. Wendy Powell says tough times have left her with only $20 per child for her back-to-school supplies.
They are using last year's clothes, absolutely, but they're also using last year's crayons and different things that I had left over.
I'm buying them less, and they're not getting to pick out much this year.
For her teenage son, that means no new shoes.
The shoes are getting tighter because the shoes prices are going up, so she can't afford new shoes.
Back to school on a shoestring budget, an unexpected math lesson for thousands of parents and their kids.
Oh, it's getting really bad now. Used crayons, ladies and gentlemen. We are losing our souls sending our kids back to school with last year's crayons. My God, ladies and gentlemen, it's unbelievable. I don't know if they've got paste. It's a good question. We haven't seen any stories about paste, whether it's new or last year's paste, or whether there is any paste. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the anatomy of how a story is created and gets legs in a drive-by media. This has been going on now for 2 weeks, and it's all part of the misery and doom and gloom that people in this country are experiencing. But hey, there's new polling data out there that suggests this may not be the case, and it comes from Reuters. Americans remain deeply worried about a faltering economy and their own financial futures, but their outlook improved slightly this month, according to a Reuters Zogby poll released today. The Reuters Zogby Index, which measures the mood of the country, climbed to 91.9 from 88.7 in July, as 6 of the 10 measures of public opinion used in the index rose. The approval rating for Congress, however, dipped to 9% from last month's all-time low of 11%, as Congress headed off to an August vacation without progress on a host of issues, including energy prices. So the American people's mood's going up. I'll tell you what, one of the things that's happening out there, this, I mentioned the Panic City that's going on in the Democrats and the drive-by media. You can see the media start to circle the wagons. Now, New York Times has a piece trying to cover up for Obama's infanticide decisions. And they're blocked. They're circling the wagons around this now. We also are getting stories, analysis from the drive-bys, that the reason McCain is going up is because he's gotten nasty and his brutal attacks on the poor Messiah. And Messiah is not responding in kind. That is not why Obama is going down. I think one ad might have been a factor, and that is the Britney Spears, Paris Hilton ad, accusing Obama of being nothing more than a little flake celebrity. But what's happening is people are seeing Obama. They're getting to know Obama. They're saying, you can't hide. He is an amateur. It is obvious to a lot of people that his depth is an inch thick. That's how little experience he's got. And the real experience that he does have as an executive running this foundation in Chicago as a street agitator is under lock and key. And nobody can see it. And they're not going to release it. Nobody knows how he ran this operation with his terrorist buddy, William Ayers. And then these stories, like look, I know Obama's not responsible for his brother. And we all have, oddballs in our families. We do. I mean, but they're our family. But there's something here. Even though this guy is living in a hut, long-lost brother found in Kenya by Vanity Fair, of all places. Imagine that they beat the National Enquirer to this story. But what is it, Obama's favorite biblical passage? Whatever you do to the least of my brothers, you do to me. And Obama's a big believer in the redistribution of wealth. And there's one member of the Obama family that's done quite well, and that would be Barry. But seems like every time we read of Barry's brothers, they are dirt poor. And there are places that Obama doesn't even know where they are. Now, I'm not making a comment on the brother. I'm not making a comment about families and that stuff. I'm just saying that Obama is presenting himself as a new savior who's going to equalize things and rid the world of misery and so forth. And yet, this is the second lost brother. The first one was a half brother. So the lost half brother was found, and he's in a pretty remote area too, with economic circumstances far beneath those of the Messiah. And now this guy's name is George. George Hussein Onyango Obama. That's right, George Hussein Onyango Obama. Senator Barack Obama's long-lost brother tracked down living in a hut on the outskirts of Nairobi in a shanty town. Mr. Obama, this would be George Hussein Onyango Obama, 26, the youngest of the presidential candidate's half-brother, spoke for the first time about his life, which could not be more different than that of the Democrat contender. No one knows who I am, he told the magazine before claiming, I live here on less than a dollar a month. Well, I thought it was a day, a dollar a month. This guy doesn't earn $12 a year. George Hussein Onyango Obama. According to Italy's Vanity Fair, his 2-meter by 3-meter shack, for those of you, this is what it says in the story. For those of you in Rio Linda, that's two by, just think of it as 2 yards by 3 yards, or think of it as 6 by 9 feet. It's probably about the size of your average bathroom in Rio Linda. Is this guy's, the size of this shack. It is decorated with football posters of the Italian football giants, AC Milan and Inter, as well as a calendar showing exotic beaches of the world. Vanity Fair also noted that George Hussein Onyango Obama had a front page newspaper picture of his brother, born of the same father as him, Barack Hussein Obama Sr., but to a different mother named only as Jael, J-A-E-L. He told the magazine, "I live like a recluse. No one knows I exist." Well, now we do. Senator Barack Obama's brother, George Hussein Onyango Obama, found living in a 6x9 shack on the outskirts of Kenya on less than $12 a year. You know, it's got to be a sad day for Dan Abrams over at DNC TV, ladies and gentlemen. We've had our little fun backs and forths with Dan Abrams, but now he's gone, or soon will be. MSNBC is replacing Dan Abrams with Rachel Maddow, a failed left-wing liberal radio talk show host with no proven experience garnering an audience at all. So it's a move that makes total sense for a place like MSNBC. But this has to really, really hurt Dan Abrams bad. I mean, it's got to, folks, it's got to be humiliating to be replaced by someone who has more testosterone than you do. And this is what has happened here to poor old Dan Abrams. So we send out our condolences here from the EIB network. All right, the polling data is in. And, you know, I said yesterday, this is the time of the campaign where polling data starts to have some real meaning as we get, you know, the week before the convention start and then certainly afterwards. And there's panic in the city where the Democrats live and with the drive-by media, because Obama is falling apart, and he is displaying himself to be an amateur, a rank amateur. And they keep now talking about how Obama is hurting in the polls because McCain pounded him, because McCain's out there. He's just being unfair, negative attacks. We were going to have such a really, really above the fray campaign. It was going to be so perfect, and now McCain has blown it. And Obama not hitting back hard enough. So, as far as the drive-bys are concerned, I'll tell you something. I think that in some deep, dark back rooms, there is buyer's remorse going on at the Democrat Party. And hey, by the way, we've been hearing about Obama's vice presidential pick for who knows how many days. And how come this hasn't leaked? These things leak. This hasn't leaked. Now, if it hasn't leaked, there's a reason why it hasn't leaked. Maybe it hadn't leaked because some people are not excited about it and are trying to change his mind on whoever he has chosen. Regardless, they cannot face reality. They simply cannot. They cannot accept the fact that Obama is dropping in the polls because of his radical views, because of his screw-ups, because of that ill-fated trip to Europe, his arrogance, his inability to speak off the cuff. No, can't be any of that, because he's the perfect candidate. Blessed by God are we to have Obama in our midst, so says Nancy Pelosi. Now, this has all been caused by McCain's campaign tactics. What is happening, ladies and gentlemen, is that people are getting to know Obama, and the more they know, the more they don't care for him. It really is no more complicated. By a fascinating story today on a blog called Death by 1,000 Paper Cuts. And this story, I think, is a microcosm of the Democrat Party and their willing accomplices in the drive-by media. Let me just share the details of this with you. In August of 2004, John Edwards, the Breck girl, participated on a program on the Turner Movie Classics channel. And they were doing a series, Party Politics and the Movies. And this aired in 2004. And what these political personalities, people were asked to do by Turner Classic Movies was to pick their all-time favorite movie and explain why. And so Edwards picked Dr. Strangelove. And he said, I believe that one of the messages Stanley Kubrick was trying to send was that putting this kind of power and this potential Holocaust in the hands of human beings, no matter who they are, is an extraordinarily dangerous thing. Well, here's the thing. Edwards had never seen the movie. Edwards had never seen Dr. Strangelove when he picked it. And the next element of the story is that he didn't even pick it. His wife, Elizabeth, did. Edwards' wife, Elizabeth, admitted in a Slate magazine interview in December of 2007 that prior to the Turner Classic Movie series, Edwards had never seen the movie Dr. Strangelove. Elizabeth claimed that her husband was not a big movie buff and that the campaign staff kicked around an appropriate film for the senator to introduce as one of his favorites. Elizabeth told the writer Melinda Henneberger that her brother, a filmmaker, gave Elizabeth a list of films to choose from, and that it was Elizabeth who picked out Dr. Strangelove as one of her husband's all-time favorite movies. Now, Edwards may have winged it during the film. Elizabeth stated that she wasn't in charge of making him see it, even though by her own admission she was the one who picked it out. So he may never have even seen the movie when he chose it as one of his favorites. And, you know, it's like a Hollywood set. Nothing is real, but it looks good when it's lit properly. And that's the Obama campaign. It's not real. Well, I mean, it's real, but there's no substance to it. But it really looks good when it's packaged and presented well. You know, the old marketing and packaging rap here. But, I mean, this kind of brazen phoniness. I'm just, you know, how could it be that so many of us were able to see the brazen phoniness, the fraudulent fakery of the Breck girl? And the drive-bys and the Democrats couldn't, because they wanted to believe the story. They wanted to believe the Hollywood set. They wanted to believe how great it looked when it was all lit up. Let's start with the audio sound bites. Ladies and gentlemen, last night, Greenville, Delaware, this is Joe Biden speaking to reporters outside his home.
I'm not the guy. See
you. You know that for sure?
Joe Biden last night, I'm not the guy. Then a couple hours later, he says he didn't mean that.
I promise you, I don't know anything. I have no idea if I've spoken to no one. Okay?
You gave have you spoken with the campaign at all?
You said it's not me. I have not spoken with anyone.
So you're not ruling out that you're still being considered then?
I have no idea. I know as well as I do.
Well, here we go. I mean, so 2 hours prior, I'm not the guy. Get out of my driveway. Leave me alone. 2 hours later, he changes his mind, says he didn't mean that, says he still could be in consideration. He doesn't know. There's a pattern here, ladies and gentlemen, when discussing these people. Let's go back. We have a montage here of a 1988, the last time Biden ran, well, first time he ran for president. This is when he got creamed because he plagiarized a socialist Labor Party member in Great Britain named Neil Kinnock, actually plagiarized part of Kinnock's biography as his own. It was stunningly embarrassing. And here is a montage of a 1988 Joe Biden for president ad.
The White House isn't the place to learn how to deal with international crisis, the balance of power, war and peace, and the economic future of the next generation. A president has got to know the territory. Joe Biden sees the presidency as a pulpit from which America sets an example for the world. He believes the developing nations once saw America as more than a place. They saw us as an idea, a goal to reach for. He knows they've lost confidence in us, that they see us losing our way, our resolve, our ideals. Joe Biden thinks it's time to remind the world of what America stands for. Freedom, equality, justice, opportunity.
1988, folks, this is coming off 8 years of Ronald Reagan. Tax rates had come down, equality and freedom were ringing all over the place, the Berlin Wall was soon to come down. And note the theme, even back in 1988, here is a Democrat ripping his own country in terms of what people around the world think of it. Plus, he basically disqualifies Obama in this 88 ad. Back in a minute. We got so much stuff in the stacks today, folks, it's just literally hilarious. We get audio sound bites that are literally hilarious. This is a hilarious day. For example, Obama was in Raleigh, North Carolina yesterday doing a town hall, and he said McCain doesn't know what he's up against. Now, this little man-child standing up there talking about McCain doesn't know what he's in for, doesn't know what he's up against. I'll tell you what, is Obama doesn't know what he's up against, and that is his past. I mean, who is McCain? McCain's a war hero. He's not going to put up with high gas prices or racists or bigots or terrorists or infanticide. He's not going to put up with any of this. You know, McCain's the kind of guy that, you know, here's Obama talking to Putin.
Well, I think we can both agree that those aggressive acts, Georgians and you took, are both wrong. And, hey, you both just retreat.
McCain would call Putin and say, hey, Fred, don't make me come over here. Something like that. Obama has no clue what he's up against. Barack Obama's closest associates hate America, folks. Bill Ayers and Jeremiah. I mean, stop and think of this. To top it all off, Obama lobbied for infanticide and doesn't have the guts to admit when he's wrong, such as the surge, for one thing. I think McCain not only knows who he is, he knows who and what he is up against when he sees the man-child Obama. As is, this is pure arrogance. It also makes, I wonder if he has a surprise for as a VP. I don't know. And then the other thing that he did in Raleigh, Obama calls on McCain to acknowledge his patriotism. Obama demanded that McCain call him a patriot. This is the stuff that happens in the sandbox. Little Barry out there demanding, after he just got through yesterday talking to the VFW, assuring them that he loves his country. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you have to go before a veterans group and assure them you love your country. There must have been some question about that or some doubt. So he leaves the VFW, heads up to Raleigh, North Carolina, and demands that McCain call him a patriot. This is a little boy trying to act like a man. This is a passive-aggressive little guy who's trying to grow up real fast and act like a man. And he's not able to pull it off. And I want to go back to this Joe Biden soundbite because I think this is interesting. The first thing he says here, it's in his 1988, Joe Biden running for the White House for the first time. And, of course, the first thing he says here, the narrator in the ad says, the White House isn't the place to learn how to deal with international crisis, the balance of power, war and peace, the economic future of the next generation. In that ad from 1988, which we have dusted off from our archives, and I'm sure the Republicans have it, McCain has it, that ad, whether Biden's chosen as the VP or not, this ad is a Democrat, Joe Biden, essentially saying that a candidate in the same circumstances as the Messiah ain't ready. He's not qualified. Then you throw all the other things that Biden has said. Yeah, we got a mainstream black guy, clean and articulate, first time in a long time, it's good. That stuff in there, oh, we hope it's Biden. But listen, more importantly, after essentially disqualifying Obama and somebody like him for the presidency, listen, in 1988, to Joe Biden, sound just like Democrats in 2008. 20 years ago, the same complaints about how the rest of the world hates us, and it is time to relight that magic flame that attracted people all over the world to America. And the one thing consistent is that in both instances today and 20 years ago, a Republican was in the White House.
The White House isn't the place to learn how to deal with international crisis, the balance of power, war and peace, and the economic future of the next generation. A president has got to know the territory. Joe Biden sees the presidency as a pulpit from which America sets an example for the world. He believes the developing nations once saw America as more than a place. They saw us as an idea,
a goal
to reach for.
Oh, yeah.
He knows they've lost confidence in us.
Who has?
That they see us losing our way, our resolve, our ideals.
Really?
Joe Biden thinks it's time to remind the world of what America stands for. freedom, equality, justice, opportunity.
What the hell did he think America was back in 1988? A gulag? You know, this is it's striking. These people cannot find it in themselves to say anything positive about the United States of America at the time. It always was greater some other time in the past, but they never say when it was better. We're going to stick with Biden here for just a couple minutes here on the audio soundbites, because last night, or Saturday night actually, at the Saddle Sore Church, Pastor Rick Warren and the forum, and I when I heard Obama, remember now, I have a theory that Obama's a vessel, that he's just an amateur, and that he is almost a robot who has been programmed and has learned very well what he says. He's able to regurgitate it, but an independent thinker he is not. We saw evidence of it yesterday. He verbatim used words of Boone Pickens, talking about Boone's idea to make natural gas the replacement for gasoline in automobiles, throughout that $700 billion transfer of wealth line. It's not a transfer of wealth. It's a transfer. It's an exchange of wealth. But anyway, when I heard Obama use the phrase above my pay grade, and I'd never heard him use that phrase before, not saying he hasn't, my mind went to work, ladies and gentlemen, and I recalled that Biden had used that phrase somewhere when he was chairing some committee at some time about, I thought it might have been a judicial hearing or something, but I know he was really ragging on somebody and telling them that what they were doing was above their pay grade. Well, we found it. But here first is Obama saying, in answer to the question, when does a baby get human rights? I don't know. Answering that question, specificity, you know, but my pay grade. Here's what he said.
Answering that question with specificity, is above my pay grade.
Either way, you Democrats and dry bears, you want to know why he's plummeting in the polls. You need to look at this answer right here. You know, abortion's one thing. Infanticide is quite another. And it is now widely known that Obama was all for infanticide. It's the only way you can put it. But anyway, there it is. That is above my pay grade. We did a Nexus search, and we found that Biden uses this phrase all the time. And Obama has talked to Biden about being Veep. So I'm wondering what O'Biden, you know, if Obama picked it up from O'Biden. But this is September 3rd, 1998, Foreign Relations Committee hearing. You remember Scott Ritter, the weapons inspector, who eventually he turned left on us all. But he was answering questions about U.S. policy towards Iraq. Now, remember, in 1998, Bill Clinton was in office, and he was saying about Saddam Hussein the same things that George W. Bush said about Saddam Hussein in 2002 and in 2001. And back in 1998, all of the Democrats were gung-ho to go get Saddam. He posed a great threat. We have to get rid of Saddam. Saddam is not living up to the promises he made in the ceasefire for the 1991 Gulf War. They were all on the same page back then. And this Ritter guy was saying things that Democrats didn't want to hear. And here is Biden chewing him out.
I recommended the president have at it and let the chips fall where they may. A reasonable position for the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State to take. But I respectfully suggest, Major, I respectfully suggest they have a responsibility slightly above your pay grade, to decide whether or not to take the nation to war alone, or to take the nation to war partway. Or to take the nation to war halfway.
He went on and on. He just ripped Ritter a new one, because Ritter was saying things about potential action in Iraq that they didn't want to hear. Remember, they were all gung-ho for it back then. So here's Barry picking up a phrase, above my pay grade, from someone else. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the drive-bys went nuts yesterday. When they got wind of my analysis of what would happen to the Republican Party and the conservative movement if McCain chose either Lieberman or Ridge. I mean, they went nuts out there. On all these cable shows, Good Morning America, they just went nuts. And it got funny. This is hilarious. Here is a montage with the drive-bys buzzing over my warning to McCain.
Rush Limbaugh making it clear he would not be very happy if a Tom Ridge or a Joe Lieberman were selected as John McCain's running mate.
Rush Limbaugh says John McCain could destroy the Republican Party with his choice of a running mate.
Today, Rush Limbaugh fired a warning shot that McCain's running mate better not be pro-abortion rights.
Rush Limbaugh said picking a pro-life candidate would destroy the Republican Party.
A choice Rush Limbaugh today called suicide.
There's our buddy Dan Abrams, by the way, the last voice you heard there. Again, he's been replaced by Rachel Maddow, or will be in early September, losing his show to somebody with more testosterone than he has. It's just a shame. But anyway, you see, I said what I said yesterday. So there's a warning shot across the bow to McCain, and every damn media outlet picked it up. It is. I hate to say they're so predictable, but I know how to do this. To play these people like a Stradivarius. They are so predictable. And once they get on something, they all get on something. Now, Wolf Blitzer got hold of Tom Ridge, and he confronted Tom Ridge with what I said.
Rush Limbaugh, he really went after the notion that Senator McCain should pick anyone as his running mate who supports abortion rights as you do. Listen to what he said on Monday.
It just would be a shame. It would just be a sad thing if he chooses a pro-choice vice president or even a Democrat, because he could just obliterate all the success and all the progress that he experienced on Saturday night with the wrong choice. And Blitzer said, well, it looked like you were one of the guys that Rush was referring to, Mr. Ridge.
Rush has never been known to be shy about giving his opinion, and I'm sure his point of view may be held by other people within the party. All I know is that my friend of 25 years, John McCain, is strongly and forever pro-life. He also believes that you shouldn't be judgmental on other people's point of view with regard to this and some other very difficult issues. And as I said before, I think he'll make the right choice for his vice presidential nominee. At the end of the day, I think Rush and everybody else hopefully can see that there's a clear choice, regardless who the vice presidential candidate, a choice that says John McCain is needed now as president of the United States in this perilous time.
Now Wolf wanted to throw Tom Ridge a little lifeline. So he said, well, if he did pick you, he'd be the president. He'd be calling the shots. You'd be the vice president. You'd be doing whatever the president asked you to do.
That's an interesting situation. Everybody would be proud to serve as vice president. But at the end of the day, you're only a private, independent voice giving your opinion and counsel to the president in a private way. But at the end of the day, publicly, you echo the president's position. And I think every vice president understands that and appreciates that's the rule.
Ah, that's a nice trick that Wolf played there, folks. But that's not reality. That's not how this shakes out. The actual making of the decision would be destructive of the whole effort to get elected, because it would be so at odds with what McCain so plaintively has believed as a core value for all of his life. Then there is the possibility that the number two guy can always become president someday. You know, the old heartbeat away business. So it does, these things do matter. None of these vice presidents don't end up just as sycophants. Back in a minute, folks. Lots more straight ahead. And we're back. El Rushmo serving humanity with half my brain tied behind my back. Just to make it fair, Lorraine X joins us, ladies and gentlemen, from San Diego. Hi, Lorraine X. Nice to have you back.
Hey, thank you, Rush. Hear me out today. Let me tell you something. I am tired of that wrinkly old man who made all those outrageous claims at the Saddleback Forum the other night, and no one in the right-wing Fox media is calling him on it.
Lorraine,
no one.
Hang on a minute. What outrageous claim? He didn't make any outrageous claims.
I'll tell you. I'm going to give you two examples.
Just give me one. We'll deal with one.
No. I'm going to give you two, because these were the most. For example, Rush, John McCain stated that he is saved. Well, in order to be saved as a non-Christian or non-Jehovah Witness Christian, for example, you must be baptized, sanctified, and filled with the Holy Ghost. Now, I want that old man to tell me and the American people, when did he ever get baptized, at what church, and when did he speak in tongues? That's number one. Number two, the final one. John McCain claimed that because his father was a high-ranking military officer, he was offered an opportunity to be released early from his torture. Oh, and you know what he said, Rush? He said that one of those communist torturers, by the way, turned out to be a Christian that drew a cross in the sand. Why isn't someone calling this man on these wild war stories? There is an October surprise coming up, and we're going to suck it to him in October regarding his
Lorraine,
war stories.
Lorraine,
I am telling you.
Lorraine,
it's over.
Lorraine, get back on the meds. You're having a bad day. The story is true. We've looked into this. You people on the left cannot handle real. You can't handle reality. You can't handle genuine. You nominate frauds. You nominate fakes. You nominate flakes. You nominate amateurs. And then you present an absolute fraudulent picture of the nominee that you people come up with. I don't care who the nominee is. We looked into this McCain story, and the left-wing bloggers tried to say that McCain lifted that from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who they said wrote about it in his book, The Gulag Archipelago. Well, guess what? It's not in The Gulag Archipelago, and a scholar who has studied Solzhenitsyn and knew him said that Solzhenitsyn never, ever told that story. He never told us. The whole left-wing belief system here for McCain lying. See, McCain had to cheat. McCain had to lie. Barry did. That means Barry's great. Barry's wonderful. Why, he's a messiah. He cannot lose. And McCain wiped the floor with him. Well, that has to be. So McCain had to cheat. McCain had to make things up. He didn't make this story up. There are veterans from the early 70s who were with McCain who said they remember him telling them that story back then. Solzhenitsyn never told a story to anybody. It never happened to him. The left-wing blogs, however, are saying, well, okay, Solzhenitsyn didn't say it, and Solzhenitsyn didn't write about it, but the rumor's been out there for a long time that Solzhenitsyn said it, so maybe McCain heard the rumor that Solzhenitsyn said it and stole it from the rumor. These people are beside themselves, and you too, Lorraine. I'm surprised that you have disappointed me. Normally, when you've called this program before, you were reasonable, you were fun to talk to, but you've gone mad. And what is it that's driven you crazy? Christianity. Christianity. Somebody openly expressing their beliefs drives you nuts. And a lot of libs nuts. Anyway, as I say, Lorraine, if the meds, give me a call back sometime next week and we'll try again. Well, they're out there patrolling the beaches looking for turtle nests because the stakes that they put in the beach, some of them got wiped out by the tropical storm. And a whole layer of new sand lopped on top of the turtle nest. Turtles may not be there. They may have been swept away. They're out there checking even as we speak, ladies and gentlemen. If they're gone, I'm turning on the lights tonight. We'll be back. Don't go away.